Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Almost Weekly. Nick and Weiss here with you after a brutal loss to the Washington Commanders in a game that didn't really matter all that much. Before we get to today's show, got to take care of the housekeeping. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. If you could be so kind, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Follow me on Twitter at NickSaros. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Ethan at EthanGSN. Weiss, the games don't really matter at this point. It's a matter of how badly they can embarrass themselves in the given game. And yesterday was, instead of the kicker, which, who, don't get me wrong, Koo was bad, it was not having a punt returner slash kick returner to dress for the game.
While having two on the practice squad, by the way. Yeah, Nick, it's just another Sunday where you wake up and you're like, I have to watch this team. And you watch the team and it's just the same thing, you know. They're just a really bad football team right now. It's such an embarrassment to be a Giants fan right now. Like, you know, watching that game yesterday and seeing how they just completely, they don't look functional. Like, they don't have any sense of, like, they don't give you any sense of hope. Like, you're just constantly aware that, you know, bad things are going to happen. And it's crazy because I think, you know, there is talent on the roster, but they just, it just seems like they don't, the only thing the Giants know, and you can listen to the players after the game. I think Brian Burns really summed it up. It's just another Sunday, you know, like you show up, you know, you're going to lose, you get back in your car and you go home. Like, that's just what the Giants have become. That's what they are. Since the start of 2024, worst record in the NFL. Since the start of 2021, one of the worst records in the NFL. Since 2017, one of the worst records in the NFL. Like, you go back years and years and years and a decade. Like, this is one of the worst organizations in the NFL. And that's why after the game, when I sort of was gathering my thoughts, I'm like, is ownership ever going to, like, come out and, like, take accountability of this? Like, you know, Joe Shane at this point, I mean, I understand, you know, there's still uncertainty whether he'll be back or not back, but it doesn't really matter because at this point, Joe Shane is just a front man for the losing. The real issue here is ownership. Like, they've struck out five times on head coaches in the last, what, 10 years. They've struck out now on two general managers. You at some point have to look at it and say, the Giants have an ownership problem. And there's many things that they're doing wrong, starting with the fact that they can't hire the right head coach. They clearly can't hire the right general manager. They have, you know, family members taking part in, you know, football decisions that have been here for a very, very long time. It's such a colossal failure. And there's so many things you can point to. But I think at some point right now, like, where is ownership? Like, what is ownership's plan here? Because you put out that statement and you say that Joe Shane is going to run your head coaching search. And fine. Okay. Immediately after that, it gets leaked to members of the media that are particularly close to ownership that no. The GM is not safe. So it's like, what's going on here? Because the Giants have three games remaining and all three of those games are against teams that are eliminated from the playoff contention. I know Dallas has a 1% chance, but they're pretty much done. And they're facing Minnesota, the Las Vegas Raiders, and the Dallas Cowboys. And these three games will mean nothing. It means nothing. They win these games, it means nothing. It gives you no hope to the future. They lose these games, okay, great. They'll have the number one pick. Awesome. But everyone knows, like, we've had enough top five draft picks over here where we know that it's not really going to make a difference because every year they keep losing. And every year we do this thing where it's like, oh, you know, week 12 comes around. It's like, oh, we're picking in the top five. We're picking in the top three, have a chance. Those things really don't matter to me. Yeah, sure. Maybe this year, because there is some confidence in the quarterback that you can potentially get a haul, but I have zero confidence that they're actually going to pull off a trade where they get a bunch of assets and B, turn those assets into players that are going to help them turn this thing around. I have zero confidence in that because I have no confidence in this organization anymore that they can build a winning football program. Why? Because for the past decade, there has been no winning here outside of 2 years. So I'm sorry. I can't get on board with all this. I can't get excited about this. So how I'm feeling? Apathetic. They lost yesterday to Marcus Mariota and the Commander team. I mean, the Commanders are a very, very bad football team. I mean, they've lost 8 in a row. There were talks of the team quitting on Dan Quinn. The defense was bad. They didn't have their starting quarterback. They couldn't run the ball. I mean, it's just, like I said, you wake up Sunday, you watch the Giants, you expect them to lose, you expect them to embarrass themselves. They do exactly that. And then you just move on with your day. And that's just what it is being a Giant fan. And I'm sure, you know, at some point over here, we'll get some clarity on what direction they're going to go in with the GM. But until that is, nothing really excites me about this football team at all.
It's basically impossible to be this dead. That's what's really stunning to me, is that this is a team, for as bad as they have played, on an individual talent basis, they have more talent than the Browns team that went 0-16. They have more talent than a lot of the perpetually bad teams of the last couple of years, like the Jets, the Browns, Jacksonville. They have more talent than those teams, but they are so poorly coached. They have such a bad culture. They have such bad vibes. It doesn't matter. Sure, they play a lot of teams who have more talent than them. They have more talent than the Commanders do, and there was not a chance in hell the Giants were going to win that game yesterday against Mariota, who's been a backup for, 7 years at this point? And the Giants couldn't put together a competitive effort until the game was already over and they were able to play catch-up behind the back door. It's as pathetic as it gets, and it shouldn't be possible to be this bad. And I know there's a little bit of a conversation that Dart looked better under Dable and that the offense has kind of hit a wall under Kafka. And that's entirely true, for sure. But at the same time, it should not be this hard to be a functioning NFL team. I'm not even saying good. There are plenty of teams that go out there every week that know they have no chance of winning, but they still try their asses off. The Browns, they're out there every single week trying to win, and they look like it. The Raiders, I can't say the same thing. They didn't need to get off the bus against the Eagles yesterday. But there are bad teams out there that try their asses off every week, and it weighs on you. And you see it on the guys' faces, and you alluded to it. Guys on the Giants, just this is what they are. They accepted the losing. They go to work. They mentally check out. They go home. They avoid thinking about football till Wednesday. They ramp up their practice. They're a poorly coached team. They're a poorly led team. And as you said, we can change the coach, the general manager, all 53 guys on the team. Until you get the ownership, the leadership, you do a president of football ops, a general manager, you get all of that in a row, all of that in alignment, we're rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. They've had 4 years now to reorganize this roster in a way that Shane wants, and they still have stunningly little to show for it in the way of talent or results.
Yeah, for me, I don't even care about like how they structure this thing. It's like last year the owner stood in front of the camera and said that the results have to be better, yep, or I'm going to make a change. The results are not better. In fact, they could be worse. So like what are we doing here? We're already at 12 losses. So it's like, it's 5-12. Like let's say they went out, right? The best record they can finish with is 5-12. Make you feel that much better than 3-14. Like, I just want to, like at this point, that's what this is about. It's like, what are we doing here? And I understand, like, I sympathize. There's obviously, you know, the owner's going through what he's going through, but it's like, who's running the organization right now? Who's doing the day-to-day things? Like, who's in charge? Like, I just want somebody from the ownership family, families to like come out and address the paying customer, because as you see, the stadium is dead. The feeling around this team is dead. You mentioned the Raiders and the Browns. The Browns have a better record than the Giants. So, you know, in this world where, you know, every win matters to this ownership group, like they're worse than the Browns. They have the same record as the Raiders, and they play the Raiders in 2 weeks. So for me, it's no longer about like who's the general manager, who's the head coach. Sure, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be like invested in who they hire as a head coach. If they make a change in general manager, I'll be invested. But it's at this point, it's like, the losing has been so much and for so long that you're not even looking at the football ops anymore. You're looking at ownership. Like, what are you doing? Who are you hiring? Who are you interviewing? What is your process? You know, like, I don't even care if they hire a football president of football operations or create this dynamic where there's a, you know, team president and, you know, whatever. I just want to know what the plan is here. Like, how many more losing seasons? Because last year when you stood up there and you told reporters that I need to see success, it was like, okay, even though I disagree with you, it's like, okay, the ultimatum is you better win or else. A year later, you're worse. So it's like, okay, what are we going to do now? So that's my whole thing. And you feel apathy because you're like, I don't even care anymore because it's been so long that this team has had any form of sustained success. But I'm just perplexed at how long they've allowed this to go on without really looking in the mirror and saying, like, what are we doing wrong? Like, what is, why is the losing this tenure of just straight losing, this culture of straight losing, now dragged to a decade long? 10 years.
And they have in the 10 years. In the 10 years, they've had two playoff seasons. In the 2 years, they've had the two playoff seasons. And that's what I would say is the going rate for stupid luck. That even the worst teams once a decade can get in. The Raiders had that 1 year where Derek Carr was an MVP candidate and they made the playoffs. That's the caliber of team the Giants are in competition with.
Can I ask you a question? Who has had a worse 10-year stretch than the Giants? The Titans
by
were the
record?
I'm talking about in terms of success. The Titans were the number one seed in the AFC.
They won a playoff rat. They won a game.
They went to the AFC championship game. Yeah. Like, they've had more success. The Cleveland Browns have been to the divisional round of the playoffs. Just like
they arguably should have beat the Chiefs when they went to the divisional round. They had that play come down to the goal line. Yeah,
sure. So I guess you could say they're right. Them and the Giants. The Jets obviously are.
Jacksonville's won a playoff game. Yeah, the Jets have not. The Jets are probably the only team that's worse because they haven't made the playoffs in 10 years. That's probably the only
Chicago
team.
Maybe because Chicago.
They haven't won a game in a long time.
But they figured it out. You expect they're going to like I really want to know, like, outside of the Jets. Right.
I think it's only the Jets. I really think that's it. Because everyone else has at least made the playoffs or been a first round.
Maybe the Raiders.
The Raiders haven't won a playoff game in forever either. You're talking
the Raiders and the Jets. That's the only teams you can really look at and say, I have a the Arizona Cardinals. You know, you want to go. The Cardinals went in 2015 to the NFC Championship game, right? They lost to the Panthers. So you can't even point at the Cardinals. So, like, in the last decade, the only two organizations that have had less success than the Giants from a winning perspective, and I'm not just talking wins and losses in the regular season, I'm talking including playoffs, is the New York Jets and the Las Vegas Raiders.
That's it. That's it. Because Jacksonville has a playoff win, and they look like they found the coach, even if this year seems a lot
like... like you said, we're counting this year. So, like, you look at their success this year. Chicago looks like it's figured out.
Yeah, and the thing I'll say, you have to keep trying. That is the problem. And the Giants, I am fearful now, are going to be extremely conservative based on the way this has gone this year, the last couple of years have gone. And we're going to end up in not a holding pattern, but they're going to end up with a lame duck head coach. Because if Shane stays, and look, I know it's not a guarantee he's going to. I think he absolutely, at this point, it's kind of crazy he's not fired already and they haven't gotten the ball rolling on interviewing candidates for people who aren't with teams at the moment. But assuming he stays, which God willing he doesn't, who are you getting to come in here to change the culture of this team? And don't tell me it's Mike Tomlin. Don't tell me it's somebody you're going to have to go out and acquire from another team. What coach you can poach, whether he's a coordinator or a college coach, can you get to come in here to supersede all of the losing and all of the problems? That is what separates the good from the great guys. The great coaches, the great players, they can rise above the circumstances around them and elevate them to where they need to be. The Patriots before Belichick and Parcells got there were a joke. You get the right coach one time, the Steelers have been the continuity era. When you think about where the Giants are at, there is no one way to do this. You don't need to get an offensive guy, a defensive guy, a special teams guy. But what you're doing right now is not working. And that is a reflection on the people who put the players on the team. Go ahead.
Can I ask you a question next? Let me ask you a question on this point that you're making. Point me to a head coach that came into a terrible situation to an organization that, you know, how you describe how bad the Giants are. Lack of accountability, decade of losing, lame duck general manager who sucks at his job, owners meddling, and has fixed that organization.
Okay, at the coaching level, I would really have to think about that. I mean, San Francisco, the between Harbaugh and Shanahan was pretty dreadful, between Chip Kelly, Trent Baalke, Jim Tomsula. But that was only like 3 or 4 years. That wasn't as prolonged as it's been right now.
The Jim Harbaugh Baalke thing started fine. They were winning. Yeah. It's when they started losing that ownership had to step in. I'm saying he walked into a mess, fixed the mess.
Shanahan to some degree, yes. McVay walking into the Rams from Jeff Fisher. They weren't a disaster, but they weren't good. I mean, they were not good. Yeah, they were a mediocre football team. I'll give you
Sean McVay.
Vrabel to Tennessee, because Tennessee was kind of in the wilderness, you know, Ken Whisenhunt, those tier of the perpetual offensive coordinators.
Okay. I'll give you Vrabel in Tennessee. Okay.
But it's not a lot of guys. To your point, you know, it really is.
You named
isn't.
Two guys and only one of them won a Super Bowl, by the way.
Yeah. Well, that's the highest bar. I'm not even trying to win a Super Bowl right now. I'm trying not to be the worst team in the league.
I know. We've lowered the bar so much. It's not even about winning a Super Bowl anymore. It's just about not being an embarrassment. But I asked you that because I'm like, this is like, it's a no-win situation for a head coach. Like, I just don't know how they can do that again.
It's, I would dare say, maybe the most – Vegas is weird because they at least – Vegas is also, like, broke cash-wise, which is also a problem for them.
They also don't have, like, any more fans anymore. Like, yeah. I don't know what – their stadium is worse now than – SoFi is during Chargers and Rams games.
Yeah, because like, everyone goes to visit. But like,
yeah,
the Giants need somebody who can set the tone administratively. You know who comes to mind, and it only worked for like 2 years, was Tom Coughlin in Jacksonville as the president of football ops, and they hired Doug Marrone. They went to the AFC title game. That's the only other type of – that's the type of decision they need. I'm not saying Tom Coughlin – he's well past his prime as far as being a football administrator. But that's what you need. You need somebody to come in here from the top down and set an authoritative culture. Hell, the Jaguars got in trouble for the rules Tom Coughlin was setting while he was president of the team about the hours of practice, when people had to be at the facility. It'd be nice if the Giants actually held people accountable at a point when it could make a difference. At this point, man, I don't know what you do. And that's really the conundrum. It's not like years past where it's, okay, the quarterback sucks, they need to replace the quarterback. They have at least glimmers at quarterback. You'll have the best, one of the 5-10 best receivers in football coming back. But the guy who picks the players cannot evaluate talent. He can't. I think I am at the point now where I am ready to say he is a bad evaluator of talent. And they can't develop guys either, which doesn't help on top of that. So you need somebody. And I generally am not a big fan of the CEO head coach. I prefer to have the offensive play calling head coach because I just think that is such an advantage, especially the later you get, the more important the games get, the more in tune with your quarterback, your coaches, the more advantages you have. But this group needs the CEO head coach. They need somebody who is going to pick good coordinators, who is going to set a tone. You know, Dan Campbell comes to mind as far as somebody who came into a dead area and set a tone. And I know him and the GM were they played together. They have a connection, so it's not a direct.
They both came in. They also came in at the same time, by the way, too.
That's the type of alignment you need. Now, Ryan Poles lucked out that he was able to get one more year to stay as general manager of the Bears and get the coach he wanted ultimately. But that's the type of full scale change you need. And I don't think the Giants have the political will for that. You and I and Ethan have all spent various times on the show talking about the various power vacuums that exist within the organization, who's friendly with who, who's aligned with who. And are you going to watch any of these people make decisions that are for the benefit of the team that don't help themselves? I'm very skeptical of that. I don't have a lot of faith, and I don't know how you could possibly have any faith in anybody in this organization at this point. It is the most dead, depressing, checked out organization I've seen. Like, the Raiders suck, but like, I kind of expected them to suck between Pete Carroll coming out of retirement, no offensive linemen, their defense is two players. Like, okay, I could see why the Raiders are terrible. The Giants should not be this bad.
No. We talk about the game a little bit. I mean, the kicking situation is just, you know, when Joe Shane had his press conference and he says, I don't make the same mistake twice.
Yeah, you make it 10 times.
Yeah, exactly. When it comes to the kicking situation, I mean, perplexing. It's actually not perplexing. It's actually, I think after the third time, it's perplexing and it's unbelievable. Now it's just comical. It's just, it's hilarious. Special teams in general, it is. They don't value it. They don't really. Nope. I don't think.
When was the last time the Giants were actively good at special teams?
They don't really. I don't know if they really coach it. Like, it just doesn't look like a team that really cares about special teams, and that's why it's constantly cost them. Whether in terms of like having the right kicker, like Nick, every week teams pick up kickers off the street, and they're making like 55-60 yard field goals. So it's like it's obviously easy because there's like an influx of them out there, but the Giants just they don't know what they're doing. And then, you know, I want to talk about this for a second because I feel like this is it's gotten very, very annoying. And at first I tried to ignore it, but then I just couldn't ignore it anymore. Can we talk about the Jackson Dart concussion stuff?
You're very adamant about this. I'm not as tinfoil hat as you about it. So I'm going to cede the floor to you and I'm going to give you a little more of a level, rational opinion. But by all means, please.
I feel like I'm not wearing, like, I feel like I have a rational. Tell me if I'm being rational. Jackson Dart here. So first of all, let's start with the hit yesterday. That hit did not, I've looked at that hit. Jackson Dart did not. The hit did not qualify for him to come off the field. That hit alone. If you're looking at that, because if that's the metric that we're using, then like 25 players should come off the field every game. Because first of all, he didn't even take the helmet-to-helmet shot. The two Commanders, defensive linemen, connected helmet-to-helmet. One of them should have came off the field. But the reason why this is happening is because you have to go back to the Philly game. And what Brian Daboll did when he went into the side, the blue medical tent. And now that I'm thinking about it, and now that I look back on it, I wish they would have fired his ass then. Because that has sort of spiraled into what we're dealing with right now. Because then he has a concussion against Chicago and they don't pull him off the field. Their mistake, not Jackson Dart's. And since then, it's been like every time he takes any hit above the shoulders or he, you know, lands awkwardly, they blow the whistle and they take him off the field. And what it's done is it's created this fake false narrative that he's a reckless player. When in reality, since the concussion, which by the way, he's only suffered one concussion this year, not five or six that we're seeing. Just because he goes in the blue medical tent, that doesn't mean he has a concussion. The situation in Chicago happens, and now the NFL, because they were embarrassed twice by the Jackson Dart concussion thing, first with Daboll yelling at the doctor on the sideline and trying to go into the blue medical tent, and then what happened in Chicago, they have now just said, okay, anytime this guy takes a hit above the waist, blow the whistle, doesn't matter what where we are in the game, take him off the field. And that has created this false narrative that he's a reckless player. And what's feeding into it is because the beat writers are now, you know, talking about it. And then now it's getting into a national level with people that don't watch the game, but see a headline that says Jackson Dart's going in the blue medical tent for the X amount of, you know, X time this year. And again, it's just pushing this false narrative where if you actually watch the games, he's doing a good job of going down. I know he took the hit against New England, but against the Commanders, he did a good job. He's done a good job of going down and avoiding hits. And meanwhile, the Giants, who the Giants don't know how to handle players like this. And so all they care about is optics. We know that results don't matter to them. It's about optics, how you lose, how you're handling this. And of course they feed into this narrative that's being pushed and that's been created. And now they're calling plays differently for Jackson Darts. That's ultimately going to hinder his development. He's pissed off. And here we are. And I just feel like it's so annoying that this consistent, we're now doing this every week. And to me, you blame the NFL for what they allowed happen in Chicago. You have to ask them why. You've pulled this guy off the field five times, and he's not had a concussion, because the one in Chicago, when you didn't pull him off the field, he came off on his own power. So, I think that this is nothing more than, you know, the NFL having a dog and pony show. The Giants feeding into this narrative and the national media just using this as, I don't want to use the word clickbait, but it's almost like clickbait. Like Jackson Dart's, you know, this is now the sixth time Jackson Dart's been put in the blue medical tent. It's just very annoying. When in reality, if you watch the game, he is going down just like every other mobile quarterback is doing.
So what I would say, because the way I would explain this and what I mean, people only see what comes across their feeds. And the vast majority of these plays within the Giants games when they're on offense don't get to Red Zone, don't get to Twitter. What they see on social media, what they see on Red Zone are the big plays. And if I see 8 plays from the Giant game on Red Zone over the course of the 3.5-hour window, and one of them is him getting hit and being taken to the tent, the other completions, turnovers, big plays, that warps my perception. So in aggregate, you are right. He is not playing with a reckless abandon, and he is not getting himself in. He's not trying to get himself hurt. He's being reasonable. He's playing a certain way. But the way games are perceived now, people only see the big stuff. They don't see the minutiae. They don't see the details. They don't see the plays where he goes down normally. They don't. And the other thing I would say, and I do think this is important, I think on some level, the Giants know they're not doing anything this year. And taking the designed runs out, taking the quarterback-centric stuff out, is a means of protecting your guy. And I don't think the Giants should necessarily be doing that. But I can understand the logic in that, well, we're not going to win anything this year. There's no point in this kid who we think is good risking himself on these designed runs, eating punishment in a lost season. And we think if we make him, we refine him a bit more in the pocket, we can bring that running stuff back down the road and it'll open more stuff up. So I do agree with you that overall, I think this is being a bit overblown, but I am concerned. I mean, anytime you go to the tent, you're always a little concerned. Football is a brutally dangerous sport, and I want him to be a good, important player for this team for a long time. And he's got to be healthy to do that. Whether or not it's in or out of his control when it comes to the spotters, like he said himself, he didn't understand why he had to come out of the game. I would always rather err on the side of caution, especially when it comes to concussions, when it comes to guys you really have stakes in. So I do agree with you that this is being overblown, but at the same time, especially in a season where the results of the games don't matter a whole lot and they can't really accomplish much else this year, I would rather be safe than sorry with the guy who is supposed to be the future of the team. So I think you are right, but I also am willing to be a little nuanced and a little more cautious maybe than you are.
Sure. But the cautiousness is not about spotter, blow the whistle, test him for a concussion every time he takes a hit above his waist. The cautiousness is about, hey, when we call a design run, it's okay if you get 5 yards and to avoid it. It's okay if you get 5 of the potential 8 yards to avoid a hit. Like that's the cautiousness. The cautiousness is not the spotter, like every time this guy takes a hit.
Well, that's not in the Giants' control.
To blow the whistle. But this, that's what I'm saying. It's not just the Giants' fault. It's the NFL's fault. The NFL's doing this because of what happened with the Giants in Chicago and what happened with Brian Daboll. It's no, like, and it's what it's doing is, it's getting into Jackson, in my opinion, it's getting into the Giants' head, and they're changing the way that they're calling plays to Jackson Dart. And I think it was the case against the Patriots, and it was the case against the Commanders. And it's no surprise when you talked about how people are saying, oh, well, you know, maybe he was better against Brian Daboll, because I think Brian Daboll was like, listen, you can be yourself, but also be cautious. Like, those two things can happen. Like, yes, he took a vicious hit, legal hit to in the New England game, and that's what we need to be cautious about. Like, you need to get out of bounds instead of trying to get the first down. But nothing against the Commanders was at no point at any play in the Commanders are like, oh, he could have avoided a hit there. Everything he did was smart, and I don't understand. And the reason why he's getting pulled off the field is because the NFL got embarrassed at what happened in Chicago and what happened in the Philly game. So that's my whole point, is it's not about protecting Jackson Dart. More so, it's about the spotters now being told to quote unquote spot Jackson Dart a lot differently than every other quarterback. And what it's done is it creates this narrative that I'm talking about, Nick, and the Giants, who are very cautious about narratives. They don't really do any self-reflection to see if that narrative is actually true. And they're feeding it, they're buying it, and they're feeding into it, and they're changing the way they're calling plays for this kid, for young Dart. And I think that's what's happening. That's why we're sitting here saying, like, yeah, Jackson Dart was better against Brian Daboll. Well, yeah, because Brian Daboll was calling plays that were or pushing for plays that cater to Jackson Dart's talent. He's more than just somebody that runs around and, you know, takes hits and picks up extra. He's more than that. But unfortunately, that's the narrative around him now because of the Giants, because of the media, and because of the way the NFL is now operating. And again, if that hit that he took against Washington, and yes, his neck bent awkwardly because he was actually going down to avoid a hit. He wasn't going chin up against the defensive lineman. He was actually going down. The fact that that play pulled him off the field, you can then point to 10 to 15 plays around the NFL yesterday where it's like, if you're pulling him off the field for that, how come that player is not getting pulled off the field? And if you're now spotting him with a different lens, then again, it's just a dog and pony show the NFL is doing just to cover their asses. When in reality, and I want you to picture this for a second. If this was a game that the Giants needed to win for the playoffs, and they pulled him off the field, we're talking about something completely different today. So my whole thing is, keep that same energy. You know it was BS. You know what they're doing is not fair and not right. So don't just brush it off because, oh, well, you know, who cares? They're 2-11.
Okay. I definitely understand where you're at, and I think that's reasonable. I do. At the same time, the season doesn't really matter, so I would rather be cautious ultimately. And look, this is how bored we are and how little there actually is to talk about, that we have to take 10 minutes to talk about this, because ultimately, again, the games themselves don't matter a whole lot, because even if you drop Josh Allen on this team tomorrow, it probably doesn't matter a whole lot. Oh, speaking of that, I was talking with somebody. I had listened. I forget what podcast I was listening to this morning while I was eating breakfast, and they were talking about it. Is there any world, Weiss, where you would at least be interested in talking to the Bengals about Joe Burrow? if you have the pick you have where you're going to be in the top five and you have Dart, is there any world where you're interested in you get a new coach and you bring Joe Burrow in and that's your impetus to reset the team and really take a leap?
Can I flip the question into a question for you?
Sure.
And this is not going to happen.
No, of course not.
You trade the number one pick to Cincinnati for Joe Burrow. You turn around and trade Jackson Dart to insert quarterback needy team picking in the top 10 for their number one pick, for their first round pick.
Make the call, brother. I'll drive him to the airport myself. I'll drive to Cincinnati. Yeah. I'll bring Joe to wherever he wants to go, Hoboken, Fort Lee, wherever you want to go, brother.
I'll say this. I think Joe Burrow has taken a beating in Cincinnati, and I think if he wants to continue playing and he wants to have a successful career, it won't be in Cincinnati, not with that ownership. They don't even shovel snow off the damn seats.
Nick. I did see that. Not a good look.
No. How much does it cost to shovel snow off seats? Probably like $2,000.
I mean, hell, do what the Bills do. Give away tickets to people who come shovel. It really shouldn't be that hard.
Hey, listen, nobody wants to go to a Bengals game.
Hey, man, people want to go to games. Not a lot, but you could have got a couple. You could have got some crazy people to go for like to go shovel. The Bills get – I granted the Bills are a good team. The Bengals aren't, but – real quick, before we wrap up and get out of here.
I want to ask you about Abdul Carter.
Oh, by all means.
All it took for Abdul Carter to look like a number three pick was him actually taking practice seriously.
It's a real bitch, ain't it? That's the thing with the guys like that. And we talked about this at the beginning of the season where the Giants don't get great players all that often. So they operate in fear of them and they let them run a little wild, whether it was Odell, whether it was Shockey. You could do whatever you wanted as long as you showed up on Sunday and you did your job. There does become a tipping point, especially at the beginning of your career. You can get away with shit once you've been an all-pro a couple times, once you've made a couple Pro Bowls, if you've won a defensive player or rookie of the year, you can get away with some stuff. You got to build yourself up to that. You got to have some credibility, some in-house stock.
Ideally. I just found it hilarious that I was like, oh, he's locked in this week, had a great week of practice. First person in, last person out. Is that all it took?
Hey, man, the talent's there. The talent is there. You got to get it right between the ears. You really need somebody else. And obviously, it's not the veterans on the team's responsibility. Ideally, this is why you have coaches. But you need to get a good mentor around him because the talent's there. Does he need to round out his pass rush game? He can't just win with straight speed the way he did in college up here. He's decent with that, but he gets another move in the repertoire. That guy has the potential to be really special. And you look, and look, I know it's not a great example because Parsons got hurt and Garrett's on a terrible team and TJ Watt's washed now. But you get one of those top 5-10 pass rushers, and that does so much for you as a team and your defense. And you don't have to solve nearly as much if you get that taken care of.
Just make sure he has an alarm clock.
That's it. It's that simple.
You want to go around the league real quick before we wrap up?
Yeah, sure. Let's hit it real quick. I still don't think anyone's good. I feel bad for Mahomes. I've found him quite annoying the last 2 or 3 years. I do feel bad, though. No one wants to see the guy get hurt.
Yeah.
They're in a weird spot. I could see Andy and Kelsey both retiring at the end of this year. I could see a world where they try and reorient because if Mahomes is going to miss a good chunk of next year and next year's the punt year, I could see a world where they do that.
Yeah, I think so. I also think that Mahomes is kind of going through that Steph Curry career arc. Remember when the Warriors went down for a little bit, then they came up and they won the championship in 2022. I think that's a similar career arc, but yeah, torn ACL, that's true.
At least medicine's good now. You don't have to be as worried about it. Like,
when it happened, December.
Yeah. Look, it's a 9-10 month injury now. Guys, he'll be back probably, and he'll be pushing to be back earlier than he probably should be. But he could probably be back by Halloween. I think that's not out of the question.
When did Daniel Jones tear his ACL? And then he came back and he was in training camp?
week six or seven against Oakland. It was close to the middle of the season.
Right. Because Thanksgiving was Drew Lock, so it was before Thanksgiving. Yeah. Micah Parsons.
That's a tough one. Green Bay could win the whole thing this year, but they lost him, Christian Watson, and they had another player go down in that game too.
They have a bunch of players in their whole line.
Yeah.
Josh Jacobs seems like he's running on.
You and I were very high on Green Bay coming into the year. I thought this would be the year for them, especially because no one looks all of that good in the NFC. Like the Rams on paper, yes, but Puka and Davante Adams both got hurt in that game yesterday. We'll see how healthy they are going forward. San Francisco is just old at this point, and their defense, no Bosa, no Fred Warner, not particularly sold on them. I think the Panthers are a fun story, but I'm not sold on Bryce Young winning two or three playoff games. No. The NFC East, I know the Eagles smoked Oakland. I still don't think the Eagles are very good. Bouncing around the NFC, this is anyone's game. If there were
the Rams need home field.
That would help them for sure.
They can't be a 6 or 7 seed and go to the Super Bowl.
They can't go outside. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's not happening. Stafford, they need the home field. They need to be able to throw around in the dome. They need the extra week off.
Yeah.
I'm just fearing that we're getting to the playoffs. No team is very good, and the Philadelphia Eagles are getting healthy.
That's the way the sport goes, unfortunately. I mean, I don't think they're good enough to win it all. I don't. The offense just doesn't work. Like, playing Oakland is a great cheat code. It's great for morale. Their offense fundamentally doesn't work other than when they play bad teams. I think if I had to handicap the NFC, I would probably take the Rams. I wouldn't feel very good about it. I wish Green Bay was healthy.
What about the Bears?
Not yet. They need to play in the playoffs. I need to see how Ben Johnson handles the clock and stuff like that. That's really important to me.
Saturday is a big game for them.
Yes, very important vibes-wise. Detroit is fun, but I think they missed their boat like two or three years ago. That was the team to do it that lost to San Francisco. In the AFC, I don't trust the Bills.
It's too much. We need Superman.
As good as they've been the last few weeks, the win against New England yesterday was really impressive to mount that comeback. Their receivers scare me. They scare the shit out of me. The Chargers are tough as nails. They have nobody on that team. Everyone is hurt. Houston is like, I do not want to play Houston because their defense is terrifying and they are physical as all hell. But their receivers are, they're
pet. You had me if when I asked that question about coaches that went to an organization and single-handedly turned it around. D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah. But they had a little going for them because they also picked Stroud. They picked Will Anderson.
They were 4-12, 3-something, and then.
But they had an abundance of assets to help kickstart that. You know, sure. When you have the two first-round picks in the top five, you can really kickstart that rebuild, or not that that transition, I should say. But yeah, I'll give you D'Amico. Sure, I think he's a pretty good coach. They've rallied. They looked pretty dog shit a month ago.
I love Houston, man. I think that
they're scary.
Their offense can get going a little bit. They remind me a little bit, not a lot, a little bit of the Eagles team last year.
Yeah.
They need more from their offense, but that defense is just so, so good.
Yeah.
Their defense is so, so good.
It's physical. It's tenacious. They got ball hawking secondary guys. Their pass rush when it gets going is really dangerous. Other than that, I keep waiting for Lamar for the light to go on, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen this year.
If the Ravens go to the Super Bowl, it won't surprise me. If they miss the playoffs, it won't surprise me.
That's the way the Ravens are, though. They either are the best team in the AFC or they miss the playoffs altogether. I like what New England's doing. I think they probably need some more guys. I really like Drake May, but I think they're a receiver away. I guess Jacksonville is decent, but I'm not sold on it at all. I even if they are going to have a home game because they're going to win their division, I'm not particularly sold on them beating whoever's going to go there.
If I were to ask you to book your ticket to the city that's going to host the AFC Championship game, non-refundable.
Probably Buffalo.
Buffalo's hosting an AFC Championship game.
I know they need to win. I think it's 3 of 4, and they need New England to lose. I think it's 3 of 4. I think the Bills will end up being the highest seed left. Yes.
Wow.
I, I don't trust New England because I just.
What about Denver?
I do not believe in Bo Nix in the slightest. I know they won yesterday against Green Bay. I know they've got the defense. Bo Nix does not. I can't trust Bo Nix in a playoff game. That's the real problem is, other than Stafford, Josh Allen, do I trust any of these guys?
That's the thing. They're not. Here's the thing. There's no Mahomes in the AFC.
I absolutely love Jordan Love. I don't trust him.
No, but I want to go back to this Denver thing. You said that there's no quarterbacks that you trust.
Yeah.
Doesn't that help Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos?
For sure. Absolutely. This is the type of year, if you're that team, if you're Denver, if you're Jacksonville, this is the year for you to get to the AFC title game when maybe you don't deserve to be there. That happens from time to time. We had that Case Keenum Vikings year aligned with the Bortles Jacksonville year. That's the type of AFC NFC title game I'm envisioning this year, where you're going to get one good team and one what the hell are you doing here team.
I asked you the plane ticket question for the AFC. I want to ask for the NFC. NFC, you're booking your plane ticket to
the Rams.
LA.
Yeah, I think the Rams. As long as Puka's healthy, they can get by without Devontae, but they need Puka to be healthy. Otherwise, their offense just, it's an entirely different team without Puka because he does so much for them. He opens up so much of the field.
Will the Giants have the number one pick in the draft?
No, because they'll beat the Raiders, unfortunately.
If they have the number one pick in the draft, do they have the conversation about Fernando Mendoza?
I wouldn't think so, no. I think they trade down. I think that's their dream, is they try and get a team to come up and get it. And they trade down and they take either Josh Downs or Caleb Downs. Yeah, I'm thinking of Josh Downs, the other. Yeah. You take Caleb Downs, you take Carnell Tate. There are a number of guys I would be more than happy to take. But you need those extra picks and you need a new general manager to make those picks.
Will Joe Shane be the general manager by the end of the season?
I hope not. I really hope not. But my other fear, and real quick, we can wrap up on this. I don't want them to deliberate too long on this. I don't want the season to end and then 3 weeks go by and then they decide to fire Joe Shane.
Yeah.
Those 3 weeks are valuable. Even if you don't hire the people you meet with, get 10 people in the building. Don't pick three guys like you did the last time. Get 10 guys in the building, even people you know you're not going to hire. Get ideas, get more outside opinions, and try and cultivate an understanding of what you need to do. Because as we've discussed, the Giants don't know what to do.
Yeah. Oh, I do think they interviewed good candidates last time for GM. It's where the head coach that they fucked up.
Yeah. All right. That will do it for this week's edition of NYG Almost Weekly. We'll be back next week in some permutation of the three of us. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Leave a 5-star review. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Follow me at Nick Zoraris. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Ethan at EthanGSN. We will see you guys next week. Thank God there are only a few games left.
Yeah, thank God.